Hey, man, how's it going?
It's going good. How are you?
Not bad.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you, too. Indeed. Yeah.
Let's kick off. Doing loads of stuff. Getting out of the house, going everywhere.
What tier are you on? You're in tier four.
We're in tier three Pro Max Plus. No, we're currently in tier four, which basically means lockdown, can't go anywhere. So good stuff.
All right, cool. Well, fun.
How's America doing?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I don't know how it's doing. You know what I do know, though, is how watchOS 7.2 is doing. A little bit. There's an update to the Apple Watch that happened last week that we didn't get a chance to discuss in all of our other topics. Some new promised features and reported features that were coming to Apple Watch that made it before the end of the year. The first is an update to how the AFib app works on Apple Watch Series 4 and higher. And what does that change with AFib on watchOS 7.2, Mayo?
Yeah, so when AFib launched, there was they had done all their medical studies and got approval from the FDA for these set ranges. So you remember you had to be above 22 years old, and it also said that if your heart rate was over a set level, then you wouldn't be able to get a result, and you'd have to calm down or stop moving and waving your arm, and if it would require you to be very still, right, while it took the reading. What they've done in watchOS 7.2 is there's now two algorithms integrated into the system. So you've got quote algorithm one, which is the original way it worked, and now you've got algorithm two, which is more it's meant to be a better system because it supports a wider range of people. You can have less variance in the arm in the results when you're moving your arm around, so you don't have to be as static. If you're still too wild, it will still say inconclusive or cannot do, retry or whatever. And it can also classify for atrial fibrillation at heart rates that are above 100 beats per minute. And this is especially true if you're an older person who may be slightly unwell already. Your heart rate is likely to be elevated, right? So if you're wanting to get readings before and your heart rate is already over 100, then the Apple Watch couldn't help you. You could only, you'd have to go to a doctor and get the full test done there. With algorithm two, Apple has, done research, done more training, got verification, done the tests, and now they can give what they believe are accurate atrial fibrillation announcements, pronouncements, diagnoses, although they would never say it's a medical diagnosis, right, because it's only two lead DCG, blah, 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 above the 100 beats per minute level. So basically, it's just expanding the utility of the feature. The reason that it's kind of differentiated between algorithm one and algorithm two, rather than just saying the ECG app is now improved, is because whatever medical health boards qualifications they have to get for this feature, not every region that has the original ECG has signed off on ECG version 2. So depending on where you are in the world, you'll actually be using a different algorithm of the app. They say most regions where the app is available, you're on the newer, on the newer system, but it's not not comprehensive.
All right. So that's the AFib update. There's also this promised cardio fitness levels feature and then low cardio fitness notifications. And for this, I want to read a lot from Apple's cardio fitness article, which you can find in the health app. When you look at cardio fitness and there's a very tiny learn more link. But what they say about cardio fitness, they say, it's short for cardiorespiratory fitness, and it's your body's ability to take in, circulate, and use oxygen. And they say this process relies on vital parts of the body, your heart, lungs, muscles, as well as the blood and blood vessels that connect them. This makes your cardio fitness level an excellent indicator of your overall fitness. And to measure cardio fitness, scientists developed a metric called VO2 max. This represents the maximum amount of oxygen your blood can use during exercise. The higher your VO2 max, the more efficient the system and the more fit you are. So understanding VO2 max is useful for everyone, whether you're an elite athlete, getting in shape, or managing an illness. And then they clarify VO2 max should not be confused with SpO2 max, which measures a different aspect of your body, the amount of oxygen in your blood. So SpO2 being what the Apple Watch Series 6 can measure with the Blood Ox app.
Yeah, and the dedicated sensor.
Exactly. Yeah. And then VO2 max being what they've calculated at times when you've had enough data through running and walking wearing the Apple Watch. Now they've got, I guess, a whole algorithm to determine the cardio fitness level. And then the big thing is not just that sort of measurement, but if you have a cardio fitness level below a certain threshold, then you'll be alerted about it. And they go on to give you a recommendation. So one of the confusing things sometimes is, well, what do you do with this information? And in this, they say your cardio fitness can be an important predictor of your long-term health. That's a link between low cardio fitness, or there's a link between low cardio fitness and a risk of high significant health issues on the road. Whatever your cardio fitness level is now, the higher you can safely get it, the better. And they say improving your cardio fitness, aerobic exercise that raises your heart rate and gets you breathing hard, gives you the biggest boost. Workouts such as running, cycling, or high intensity interval training are great. Even just adding a few hills to your daily walk can be a good place to start. And then finally, when to talk to your doctor. If your VO2 max is in the low range and you're considering a big change in your exercise routine, you may want to discuss that with your doctor first, especially if you think an underlying condition could be the cause. Significant changes in any vital sign can indicate a change in your overall health that's worth bringing up with your doctor. So that's cool.
Yeah. And so obviously you need like dedicated sensors to get this precisely. Mm-hmm. The Apple Watch does its like best estimate. They say when they can give you an estimated reading between 14 and 60. And it's only tracking that when you do a workout that's a brisk hike, walk or run, an outdoor brisk hike, walk or run. And along with that, the workout has to have a persistent heart rate measurement. So mm-hmm. if you try and get these readings and you just go for a walk around outside and you don't get it, it's because it, you know, couldn't actually measure your heart rate all the way through, which I think is a problem that a lot of people actually have and they just never notice. Because if you actually look, a lot of the time it happens to me where I've done a 10-minute workout, whatever, and then look at my watch and it's the heart rate readings grayed out because it's only been able to track it from like 5 minutes ago, and the just the general movement of going around outside mm-hmm. makes the sensor glitch out or whatever, and it can't get an accurate reading. So in those cases, you're not going to get VO2 calculations either. So you need the stars to align a little bit, but obviously the point is this just does it automatically for you when you're doing a normal workout. So over the course of a few months, you can see a decent estimate from and you can track the change over time as you work out or get healthier or whatever.
Yeah, I think heart rate reading, I don't see the gray a whole lot, but I know it can certainly do that if the watch is looser than it wants to be to get a good heart rate readout. And so maybe
I wear my watch quite tight. I think it, but my arm is quite small, so I think sometimes just like
yeah.
The actual like flat bit of the arm isn't quite flat enough for it. So sometimes it like glitches out or whatever and says it can't
sure,
do it. And my brother has an Apple Watch as well. He has Series 5. He has this problem quite a lot, probably even more than me. And I've looked at how the watch sits on his arm, and his arm's bigger than mine, but just the way it rests on there, the curvature of the arm, even less like skin's connecting to where the sensor is. So, mm-hmm. It's just something like that where if you're not moving, the lights, the photodiode stuff can happen without interruption. They obviously make it better and better every year, but at some point there's limits to the technology, right?
Yeah. So yay WatchOS 7.2, not just all of the Apple Fitness Plus stuff we discussed last week, but also the update to AFib detection and then also cardio fitness levels and alerts based on those levels. So that's awesome. It's
yeah. And they brought the ECG app to Taiwan as well. And family setup, cause remember family setup requires like carrier support for the phone number stuff.
Right.
That's now also available in Bahrain, Canada, Norway, and Spain. So they're expanding the distribution. It's just mm-hmm. taking a little while to get there. If you permit me a slight tangent, my dad has an Apple Watch as well, and he's been having a problem for the last few months. Actually, he has the Wi-Fi Series 3, which is still sold by Apple, right? That's the $199 model. He's had it since Series 3 came out, but this is still a current model in the sense they still sell it, right? So that device only came with 8 gigabytes of onboard storage. And my dad was hitting an issue where he couldn't update to WatchOS 7 because he was out of space. And even after I got him... firstly, it was a bit of a palaver to determine what the spaces you've been used up by, because there was a weird bug where you went in the storage menu and the numbers didn't add up properly. So like, it would say a total at the bottom, but then the itemized list of what's using up your storage wasn't actually adding up to the total. So, and there was like 2 gigabytes unaccounted for. After a bit of like random testing or whatever, it seemed to be that the we obviously cleared out all the photos because he didn't look at the photos on there anyway. Some like music places had synchronized over without it. Like he says he never turned it on. I don't know. Maybe it turned on itself or you know whatever. So we turned that off. We cleared out all his music and then we tried to update and we still had the same issue where it required. I think the watch said it required 2.6 gigs of storage to perform the update and he only had 2.23. So it was a bit of a problem. Like he was just stuck on WatchOS 6 for the only reason that his storage capacity wasn't big enough to actually support the update.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike iOS, where if your storage is low on iOS, it like offloads all your apps and it's pretty aggressive on, you know, temporarily deleting stuff. The watch doesn't really have that as much. Like I also think that's just because there's less stuff on the watch that you can delete to even save space. But the kind of like help, there's no like assistant when you, oh, it's time to update, can I temporarily remove some stuff and then put it back after? That doesn't exist for the watch where it does for the phone. So anyway, he was talking to me. I was like, I don't know what should we do. So we ended up resetting the watch to blank and I just told him to update immediately and that worked. But then the very next update came along and he hit exactly the same problem.
Oh, so no.
It's pretty annoying, right? If you're gonna, you can't go, because he updated from 7.0 to, I think, 7.0.2 after wiping out. Then 7.0.3 came out and he had the exact same issue. The storage was too big. And he had even put back like all of his apps and stuff, right? It was still, I think the 8 gigabyte storage is just too small. I think that's the unfortunate conclusion, is that in the modern Apple Watch era, the base storage of the 3 or 4 year old model is just not high enough. Like mm-hmm. The Series 4 has 32 gigs of storage. So it's like 4 times as much. So if you're on, then there's a massive difference in available space between the 8 gig and the 32 gig, because of the 8 gigs, you know, 3 gigs are already used up by the system when it's completely fresh, right? And then you put a little bit of data on, you've got like, you know, you're edging around 4 normally, and then you only need some slight, add some apps on and stuff, and then you end up, you know, in like dad's situation where he was below 2.5 or whatever.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't really have a good answer for him other than just like ignore the updates. So, because you just kind of stuck, right? Like it was too much of a hassle to reset the watch every single time he wanted to do a point update. And for the last month or so, he'd actually just been living in that state. He didn't have his clock phases set up, he wanted, he didn't have all the apps re-downloaded because it was just too much of a pain. So luckily, I visited him like last week or whatever. And we tried the 7.2 update, which is this, you know, the one we're talking about with Fitness Plus and the cardio fitness stuff. And for whatever reason, that one just worked. Like, we still only had 2.25 gigs free or whatever, but I don't know if they fixed a bug or something, but the amount of storage required to install 7.2, at least on the Series 3 watch, was way lower because it installed without complaint.
Right, okay.
So sort of fixed itself. I don't know what's going to happen when 7.3.1 comes out or 7.4. I guess we have to like keep tabs on it or whatever, but that solved it. And if you Google like Apple Watch Series 3 can't update out of storage, there's like Apple community threads of many, many pages of people having the exact same issue, because I think unfortunately the 8 gigs of storage is just too low.
Well, and 16 gigabytes, that was on Series 3 for cellular, right?
Cellular, correct. Yeah.
And do they still sell that? I guess they do. The cellular series 3.
Yes, I believe they might only say Wi-Fi only. I don't know. I can't remember.
Either way, the $200 version is 8 gigabytes only. So I had that exact same problem recently, actually. Now that you mention it, I gave my Apple Watch Series 3. It was 38 millimeter Wi-Fi only that I was using just for like testing in the background for some things. I gave it to my colleague Daryl Sasse, who works with me on Space Explored. And he went to pair it with his phone, and he recently switched from Android to iPhone. He bought my old iPhone 11 Pro Max, and he's sitting with the watch, and he had the same thing, brand new, you know, for him configuration, and he couldn't update it. And he's like, he asked me what to do, and I was like, oh, I don't know. So I Googled around, and there's this support document from Apple that says if you don't have enough space to update your Apple Watch. And they recommend rebooting your watch first. And then if that doesn't work, then removing media and apps. If that doesn't work, unpairing and updating the watch again, just like as you did. And that's the process. So he had the exact same problem where he couldn't get to the latest version of watchOS. And maybe this was before watchOS 7.2 hit. I'm sure it was when we were trying this. But some,
yeah, because I mean, 7.2 was only last week, so.
Right? Yeah, and this was a couple of weeks ago, but exact same issue.
Clearly is an issue, and I think Apple just kind of misjudged the lifetime of the Series 3 watch for its storage space, right? And
yeah,
this happened with and obviously that's bad, right? They should have given it more storage in hindsight, but this same problem happened with like iPhones too for a while. Like if you bought an old iPhone that only had 16 gigs of storage at the, you know, the tail end of the 16 gig lifespan, you'd have the same issues where you couldn't update and you'd hit problems and people get stuck on old iOS versions. That's why that was such a problem on the iPhone, that they did all those features in, I think it was iOS 11, which was like offloading apps and temporarily uninstalling apps and re-putting them back on again. Like they added all these like processes to iOS just to make sure that older phones could stay current, right?
Yeah, because that's the only limitation, really. I mean, otherwise it's perfectly functional. That's why they continue to sell them brand new today.
Yeah, so that kind of like assistance doesn't really exist on the watch. You're just kind of stuck.
Because even on other devices that aren't the Apple Watch, so like last weekend I was helping my aunt update her MacBook Pro 13 inch from 2013 or 2014 to Big Sur. And she wanted to update it, but it didn't have enough storage. And that was just to download the installer. And so when I was visiting her, I freed up some space on her computer. And I think it wanted like another 10 gigs for the installer to download. And then it did. And then it wanted like 25 gigs to install. I was like, oh no. Her MacBook is 120 gigabytes, you know, and it wasn't too long ago when Apple stopped selling those 120 gigabyte options. But I remember those for the longest time, the 12 inch MacBook was 256. And then the MacBook Air was 128.
Mm-hmm.
It was cheaper, but it was also half the storage. And like, you know, and in her case, I had a really hard time getting rid of stuff. Like luckily I found an iPhoto library that you couldn't do anything with anymore. She also had a photos library, but there was like a 12 gigabyte iPhoto library that I was able to get rid of. I didn't want to do that, but it was like the last resort, and then get her updated. But on the iPhone, iPad and Mac, you can plug in an iPhone or iPad into a PC or Mac and update it for iTunes, even if you have a storage problem.
Yes.
It could use the wire. And then on the Mac, you can create a bootable installer. You can put the Big Sur update or whatever macOS version it is on a hard drive and then update from that external hard drive. But on the watch, there's no route for that at all. So the answer is just to have enough capacity to get you through. And it probably is the case that with the 16 gigabyte version and the LTE model and higher, that we're pretty far from that being an issue, because like, you know, iPhones had the problem when they were 8 and 16, and 32 was a pretty good threshold to hit to get out of that. But 64 certainly was. And we just, you know, it would take a lot to get back in that to be a problem. The system would need to be huge.
Yeah, like I'm sure the 16 gig watches and up don't ever hit this issue, because who's going to fill a 16 gig watch, right? You can't just put enough stuff on it. The 8 gig one's just close enough to the line where you get burned, unfortunately. When you've accounted for the usual stresses of life, you've got 2020 to deal with in all of its glory. It's been a stressful year. Do you feel strained or just not as happy as you do normally? Sometimes you might just want someone to talk to who is trained about mental health and lifestyle. BetterHelp is here to help and lets you do just that from the comfort of your own home. BetterHelp assesses your needs to match you with a licensed professional therapist tailored to helping your personal well-being. Simply connect in a safe and crucially private online environment. After signing up, you can start communicating to a therapist in under 24 hours. This is not run-of-the-mill self-help. This is a professional counseling experience. You can access counselors specialized in all sorts of areas like stress relief, anger, relationships, depression, sleeping, and so much more. You can start a conversation with a therapist at your convenience. Just send a message anytime, and the therapist responds in a timely basis. And you can schedule weekly video chats or phone calls as well if you want to. It's more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and financial aid options are also available. And of course, everything you talk about is 100% private and confidential. Start living a happier life today. As a listener to this show, get 10% off your first month by visiting our sponsor at betterhelp.com/MacHappyHour. Join over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health. Again, that's BetterHelp. BetterHelp.com/MacHappyHour. Thanks to BetterHelp for sponsoring the show.
Hi, Mio. I want to talk about HomeKit and Apple TV on two different topics that haven't come up on the podcast before now. The first one is this new HomeKit feature that was announced at WWDC and then actually released a few weeks ago. It's ambient lighting. This is the feature in HomeKit where any HomeKit light that has color temperature changing, as an option can support ambient lighting if they have the right, update from the manufacturer. So, there was, Eve had an update for some light strips and products. Hue, being like probably the biggest player in the space, later did an update to the, through their bridge, which took a long time to reach all customers between announcing its release and actually doing it. And for me, it was about 4 weeks of me checking regularly. It was the one time I wanted my Hue bridge to update. But just one day I opened the home app and it presented ambient lighting as an option there. And, it's a pretty cool experience. I want to make sure I get this right though, from my experience and what I expected. So can you describe ambient lighting first?
Well, I don't actually have any ambient lighting compatible stuff.
Okay.
Because our smart lights that we have through HomeKit in, this house are all at the switch level. So
smart, but you can't do this. Yeah.
Yeah. So they can do brightness adjustments, but they can't change color temperature. Right. I would actually not mind if they added like a basic ambient light mode, which would just slowly adjust the brightness over the course of the day. Mm-hmm. But there's no support for that. You have to have like the compatible lights with the exact color temperatures. But my understanding of the feature is that you enable it and then across the day, based on like sunrise and sunset times, in the morning it will be more yellow. In the middle of the day, it will go to more bluey shades, right? And then as it goes back to evening, it goes back to yellow colors again. So it kind of goes through that spectrum, sort of ish like night shift on the Mac or the iPhone or whatever, but for your lights. So you kind of wake up to like the warm glow of the sun, and then it gets to like cooler color temperatures during midday. And then it slowly goes back down to like the kind of yellower shades as you get closer to bedtime. Is that reflected in what you have?
That definitely reflects my understanding of it. I'm doing a really quick test to see what I'm getting right now. Living room lamps, they're on the table. And yeah. So yeah, that's it. And what's kind of neat though is it's not just the time of day that's a factor. It's also the brightness. So if you have a lamp at 100% during the day, then full brightness is going to be that cooler temperature where it's closer to blue, brighter, but even if it's 3 p.m. in the afternoon before sunset, if you bring it down to 50%, it gets warmer. And if you go down to 10%, it's very orange. And so it's not just time of day, it's also the brightness, which is a really cool factor because it's like, if you want the lights to dim, having a dim, really cool temperature light might not be what you're after. So it's kind of neat because you can change the color temperature anyway on bulbs that support it. And then you just change the brightness. And so, it would be a factor of what is the time of day. And you could even automate that. You could say after sunset, around sunset and make these changes, but it's also the brightness level, which I didn't realize until I got to use it. So that's pretty cool. I really enjoyed using it. One thing it doesn't do is it doesn't change the brightness for you. So, if you have your lights at 100%, they're not going to go down to 50 or 25 on their own.
Right. So it won't like get to nighttime and then they're like slowly dim.
Right. And so the color temperature of 100%, just in my, like I haven't like measured it or anything, but I'm pretty sure just eyeballing it that the color temperature does change what 100% would be between, times of day, but I think what I kind of want though is for it to be more dramatic for you to have also the brightness change because you're going to get a very different color temperature. It's pretty subtle if it's just the color temperature without the brightness level changing. And as you change the brightness and it's much more impactful and I think beneficial. So I've gone through the home app and set up automations for, half an hour before sunset, lower the light percentage brightness from 100 to 70. And then, like an hour after sunset, go down to, 30%. And it has that more dramatic effect that I was looking for. But all in all, it's a really good start. And I think it's just, and having it described during WWDC and then actually using it, I think what I expected and what came is a little bit different. Because I was also thinking brightness levels too.
You were thinking like when it's nighttime, I go in the kitchen, my eyes won't be blown out because it right. adaptively got dimmer as well.
Yeah. But it's a very cool option. I mean, in the home app, it appears, you know, it looks like a little miniature color picker between cool and warm lighting as like one of the options. And, there was a period where it wasn't working the right way for me because I had an automation that when I arrive home, just turn the lights on to a brightness and color temperature light. And so it was like over. Yeah. And I was like trying to troubleshoot it. Why does this keep resetting? And once I fixed that, I was like, oh, now it works as I expected. But there are those factors. And so I feel like that's an opportunity that it could go in the future is, not just the color temperature change, but the brightness change too. You know,
yeah, because there's no way through automations to get a smooth gradation of brightness levels, right? Like,
it's going to be like a big 30% jump. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, there's no way it's just too much hassle to set up like a 1% change every 5 minutes or whatever. Like, because it's very easy to say like half an hour before go to 70 and then at sunset go to 50 or whatever. But you can't say like between an hour before sunset and sunset, you know, transition from 100 to 50, right? And just slowly change over time, which is, I think, what a lot of people actually want to do, right? Like,
yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's a good start, but definitely room for improvement. And it is just a niche feature in that not only do you need the compatible hardware, you also have to be doing, you know, specifically bulbs, right? And not like switches and stuff like that.
Yeah. And then I did make a HomeKit scene with the HomePod Mini in the bedroom. And, it's the goodnight scene and it turns off all the lights completely. And then it begins to play music from the HomePod Mini and it plays at a specific volume and it shuffles an album on repeat. So there's this group called Test Shot Starfish and they make music that SpaceX uses on their rocket launch coverage, of their own stuff. And so like I used Shazam to figure out who it was and then, you know, found the album and they have like a music that's called like Songs for Space or Music for Space or something like that. And that's very upbeat and electronic and all that. But they also have a version that's like Sleep Songs for Space or something like that. And I made that part of the goodnight scene where it plays at like 20-30%. And it's really cool. So, I tried that last night and I think that's something I'm going to keep using because as long as it's not like the same beginning song every time, but it's a random song, then it shuffles, from that album, then that's neat. And maybe one day I could do like a whole playlist of sleep music, but for now it's a cool start. And, as I woke up throughout the night, you know, just a few things waking me up, it was very pleasant to go back to sleep. So I liked that.
So just one quick question. So say if you've got lights, right, they're on the ambient lighting mode. And then you want to change them yourself. I don't know. You want to make them blue, right? For fun. When does it go back to going to ambient lighting? Do you have to like re-click back on an ambient lighting button? Do you see what I mean?
Yes. Or if you have an automation for it to choose that as a color. So I've got automations for time of day. And then when I leave and arrive. So if I leave, all the lights turn off. And if I arrive, all the lights come on to different
back brightness. To like the default color temperature.
Yeah, I've got that as the default Well, I have ambient lighting as the default color temperature.
Gotcha. Yeah,
and so
yeah.
It goes to that. But you could, you know, manually or with Siri say turn blue or another color temperature. And it would do that until the automation kicks in. Or a scene kicks in, or you do it manually.
There's probably some clever voice thing where you can say, like, set bulb to ambient lighting or something. That probably works if you find the right incantation.
Yeah. Didn't you do a thing once where, like, where you change it to, like, colors and you ask Siri what the color name is?
Oh, yeah. So if you go on, like, the color wheel and you just pick random colors and then say, you know, hello, Siri, what color is this bulb? It like, not only just says, like, red, it says, like, you know, burnt sunlight. And it has all these like, it has different colors for like every single shade that you can imagine. And you can actually set them the other way around as well. But obviously, who's going to remember what all these random colors are called? But if you're bored and you want 5 minutes of fun, just go on like a smart bulb in your home app, just set a random color in it and then ask Siri what color it is. And yeah. It'll say like, it'll come up with like amethyst lime, you know, like all of these like random shades. But I mean, they must have like official meaning somewhere. It was fun to play with.
So I just muted myself and asked my HomePod what color the lights were. And the table lamps are at 71% and the color temperature, the setting is to ambient lighting and it's khaki and corn silk is the name of the color. So what if I go to 100% if it's a different name, but it just reminds me of the cases, you know, case colors that they pick.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's funny.
Yep. And then also, so I've, in completing my move recently to Orlando, I got my Apple TV 4K here and both of the big HomePods, and, I put HomePod minis in the kids' room where the big HomePods were, and, you know, they love them. But the big HomePods, because they're in a stereo pair and they're next to the Apple TV, I use the new feature in tvOS where you have them be like the dedicated speakers, not just AirPlay to them, but also it knows that it's that way. And then it's more than just AirPlay.
Mm-hmm.
And it also, I don't know, what do they call it? Home theater mode or something like that. But it's a mode where, you get an enhanced audio experience when you're watching, content on Apple TV, right?
Yeah. So that's like, cause you could always pair your speakers to, you could always pair AirPlay 2 speakers to the Apple TV, but there's a specific version of it for the big HomePods, not the minis, in single or stereo pair, which enables, simulated 5.1 surround sound, 7.1 Dolby Atmos to the HomePods.
Yeah. So I'm using that, definitely couldn't tell you that it's like surround sound. I mean, it's not.
Yeah.
And I've got a pretty good gap between the two. So there's like, it's like HomePod, lamp, gap, TV, lamp, HomePod. So it's not like they're really close. They're pretty separated on either side of the room. But I definitely don't get like, I wouldn't mistake it for a surround sound, but it doesn't sound bad at all. And, I was nervous about having the big HomePods in an apartment environment again. But this place that I'm in is like the first floor is businesses, and I never hear my neighbors or anything. So I think everything's pretty thick, so pretty sturdy. So, been happy with using them, especially for the TV. I did have one issue where I've got the HomePods or the TV speakers when I'm using Apple TV as the input. And, I keep them at about 30%, normal HomePod volume without being crazy. I was using my AirPods Max, the over ear headphones, as the output and for a little while. And, more on that in a bit. But then something happened and it changed back to, I think like my kid touched the top of one of the HomePods or something and it began to play music. And I was listening at 100% volume with the earphones. And then it played at 100% volume through the HomePods.
Oh,
was,
no.
Yeah. And it was just like really uncomfortable, like physically uncomfortable. I couldn't get it to stop soon enough, but, that's one of the risks, I guess. And then I have had an issue where, with all of these new features, there's going to be like kind of growing pains, but I have had an issue where, the HomePods as Apple TV speakers, they know they're in that mode and they'll usually show like what's playing on the Apple TV on the iPhone now playing tile for that target. It's pretty good. So you don't have like HomePod and Apple TV. You've just got the one tile there and it knows, but I have had a song that someone requests on the HomePod get stuck in the now playing queue. And sometimes it won't show what's playing on the Apple TV. It'll show that song queued up. And then sometimes it'll just decide it's ready to play that song for whatever reason. And I've had like Baby Shark kick in over what I was watching on TV.
Oh, okay. I see. So it's like, it like forgets the cue and then it like pushes it back in like randomly.
Yeah. Exactly. So that's not so pleasant. And then like you can change the volume with a slider when it's not out of cue and it knows that it's currently playing Apple TV content. And that changes the HomePod speaker volume. That's really neat. But a lot of more than the other problem I've seen where it forgets that it's an Apple TV speaker and it will show, the group of tiles for what you could play through the HomePod and the slider becomes inactive for that. It does because it's not actually like wired in or connected, in idea. But then you can go to the remote app and change the volume with your volume buttons that way. So it's remote control center tiles. So it's a little bit wonky, but in terms of just having this has been like, I was just using my TV speakers and no soundbar or anything. And then I just put these here and they're also HomePods. It's really good, especially for, already having HomePods. I'm not going to say for $600 because you can get a pretty mega soundbar for that. But
yeah, you should get a set. Like if you've got them and you've got a small like apartment or something and you haven't got space for many things, then sure, like the HomePod setup's probably a decent idea. But if you actually just want like proper surround sound, you should get soundbars, you get dedicated speakers.
I mean, but it's really minimalistic, and it's just like two speakers. You plug each one into the wall. When I was before I moved, I had a Dolby Atmos soundbar from LG, and it had its own subwoofer as well. So then there's two different things versus two different speakers, you know, and it's much larger. And I never felt like I got the Atmos experience where it was, you know, it had like upward facing speakers on the soundbar, and I never had the right arrangement and I guess the room size and everything where it felt like there was more than just the soundbar in front of me.
Yeah, whether you're talking about soundbars or HomePods, like getting that, you know, simulated surround sound to actually work is just kind of potluck based on how your room's set up, I think. Like some people say they can, they hear it, right? And they get like the sound going over the top of them and it feels really wide. And other people, it's just, no, you just hear it coming. Nice sound, but it's not surround, right?
Yeah, and I'm sure that Atmos effect where you get the volume, you know, or you get sound projected to the ceiling and it bounces back to you. If you have like a den, like a studio kind of room where it's a very small ceiling and small room, that's easier to do. But in both cases, with the house and the apartment, the living room area is like 12-foot high ceilings, and speakers are just nowhere near that high to really have that same effect. So,
But even ignoring all of that, this is a great move because the default audio thing makes sure that the TV remains linked to the HomePods, whereas before, when it was just an AirPlay 2 connection and it wasn't like the default audio part, if you asked the HomePods to do a Siri request, they'd very easily forget the AirPlay 2 part. So you'd always have to go and reconnect them again. And it was a massive pain, but they've actually fixed that. So
now Siri will kick in and then just go right back to the TV.
Yeah. Smart investing means having a diversified portfolio, a combination of stocks, bonds, mutual funds. But if you've ever looked at the details of the most successful portfolios, you can usually find a diversified set of real estate. Real estate is not easily available to individual investors until now. Fundrise enables anyone to access these asset classes. Fundrise makes it easy to build a portfolio of institutional quality real estate investments. Whether you're just starting out in the investing field or you're looking to grow, Fundrise has got you covered. Fundrise is an investing platform that makes investing in high quality real estate as simple as investing in the stock market. You can build a stable cash flow with a dividend-based portfolio or look for long-term growth with appreciation. Fundrise supports all pathways. And the Fundrise platform manages more than $1 billion in assets for 130,000 investors. And since 2014, the Fundrise platform has averaged 8.7 to 12.4% annual returns. And investors have made in excess of $79 million just in dividends. Fundrise connects you with a team of real estate professionals that vet and manage all the real estate investments. You can track your portfolio's performance through the easy-to-use Fundrise website. Start building your better portfolio today. Get started at fundrise.com/happyhour to have your first 90 days of advisory fees waived. That's fundrise.com/happyhour to get your first 90 days of advisory fees waived. fundrise.com/happyhour.
All right, Mayo, this week I'm wearing a very special shirt. It's my long way up shirt. Got some long way up merch from the Apple TV Plus series. I ordered it from their website because I think we were talking and you mentioned to me that like they have a store. And so I went and sought it out and bought some stickers and a t-shirt. And now I've bought.
Yeah, the long way franchise specifically have their own, like, merch website.
Yeah. And I've since bought the three posters bundle and they'll be coming soon. I really love Long Way Up and the Long Way franchise. So that's cool. But this is, you know, Apple TV Plus. We're talking about the first anniversary of Apple TV Plus. I'm sure a year ago we had like a whole episode about Apple TV Plus in general and what we thought at launch and what, you know, we wanted from it and what we expected from it. Now we've got a whole year behind us of using Apple TV Plus. And, you know, we've got the launch shows, but we've had many, many other shows since then and movies. So I wanted to talk about, you know, early on, I know that C was one of the shows that I was tuning in for every week to kind of find out what happens next on. And that was probably what I would rank the highest. And I really enjoyed the morning show. Since then, I think For All Mankind has become like one of my top three, top four. I think Long Way, it's funny because we're talking about this and I like Long Way Up the best of all the shows because that was the one I had to play as soon as it came out. After the suspense of C went away and like C is kind of gruesome and I'm not really sure. Like it would even in the season two would be my next, you know, go to thing every week. But, so, and you mentioned, well, with Long Way Up being non-fiction, you know, it's just a different category for you. But I still think for me, Long Way Up would be first and then For All Mankind And then the movie The Banker, which I got to see in theaters, but, you know, it was like right before everything closed.
That's an experience in itself for 2020.
Yeah. The last movie to be played. But I really enjoyed The Banker, and I've seen other movies on Apple TV Plus, including Greyhound, you know, and we talked a bit about that off the air, but I kind of felt like it never had that moment that I thought I was waiting for. And it turns out like the whole movie was like the moment, and there wasn't anything that it was leading up to. I think that's fair to say without any spoilers. And then, what's the other one called? On the Rocks?
On the Rocks, yeah.
Yeah, that one I watched and enjoyed. I liked the talent in the movie, and I thought there would be an ending. It's like, I enjoyed the entire movie until like the very ending. And I'm not usually one to get bothered by the way a movie ends and have that, like, have like a 2 minute scene mess up an hour and a half experience for me. But in that case, I really thought that it was going to be like a non-obvious ending, which was felt obvious that it would not be obvious, but then it was the obvious ending. And I was like, oh, I kind of felt more like a Lifetime movie than anything else at that point. So, and then what's the out on TV, out on television?
Visible Out on Television.
Yeah. I really enjoyed that too. Like, was that a series? Wasn't it?
I think it was five episodes.
Five episodes. Yeah. Yeah. That one I learned things from that I did not know. And it had, you know, it's another one of the nonfiction categories. So I guess I just have a thing for nonfiction. Even The Banker is like based on reality. and then For All Mankind being like alternative history, but, and then future stuff. But yeah, I'd have to say Visible, The Banker, Long Way Up, and For All Mankind. Those are the, like the top three, four for me.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I love nonfiction stuff. Like, back in the day, the old Top Gear stuff, I watched that like every week, like religiously, right? It's great. But I guess if you're talking on, at least on TV Plus's terms, if you asked me, like, if you could only have one or the other, I'd just pick their like drama stuff personally. Like, I like Ted Lasso as well.
Yeah, I enjoyed that. I mean, I talked about it when it was brand new, you know, and I like discovered it before I realized there was all the hype around it.
Yeah.
And, it doesn't make like my top list because of
yeah, like, exactly. Right. Yeah. Like I like watching it, but for me, if you're asking me like to pick, you know, a very short list of favorites in my head and just what I like watching the most, the drama stuff just rises to the top and it just beats everything else out. Right. Like, so I'd probably say For Mankind, Morning Show, Defending Jacob. That was one that came in April. That's the Chris Evans, like, he defends his son who may or may not have killed someone, etc., etc. It's like an 8-episode series. Mm-hmm. And then in terms of films, yeah, I have to agree with you. Like The Banker's the by far the best film on Apple TV Plus, at least today. Like,
you know, a year ago we were talking an awful lot about The Banker.
Yeah, yeah, that was a controversy and a half,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
like obviously they've only had like 7 films come out total, and 3 of them are like the documentary stuff, right? But I think Apple's initial bout of films has been weaker in general than the TV shows off. Because I agree with you, like On the Rocks and Greyhound, they just don't quite hit the mark. Like you watch them for an hour and a half and then you feel a little unsatisfied, at least in my opinion. I know some people love them or whatever, but for me, I feel I love having like the proper definitive endings with like a big twist or something of that effect. And both of those films, they just don't really have it. The Banker doesn't really have it either, but it feels complete. Like I can't really explain it, but The Banker feels like a proper complete film with a start, middle, and end, and the other two movies just kind of don't. But the TV Plus stuff, at least in terms of film content, they've only had, you know, 3-4, depending on how you're counting, in terms of like, you know, proper like theater, you know, feature film type stuff. So they've definitely still like ramping up there, and they're going to have a lot more film content coming in, you know, next year and the years to come, obviously. But in terms of TV shows, I'd say overall, very happy with the content selection. Like, it's very little on TV Plus where I'd be like, "Do not watch this; is terrible." Amazing Stories is one of those, by the way.
Yeah, I was gonna ask you what are, you know, we talk about our favorites. What do you think the most disappointing is? Not just like our least favorites, but like what do we expect to be really grand and then wasn't? And I've not seen much of Amazing Stories, but if you would ask me from the very beginning, I would have thought that would be one of the big hits. I mean, Spielberg, come on.
I mean, that was the first person they had present at the March event. Like, Spielberg was number one, and his series did not live up to most people's expectations, I think. Like he and Spielberg's making other stuff for Tubi Plus as well. Like he's doing the follow up for Band of Brothers and The Pacific. I'm blanking on the name, but it's the Masters of the Air. It's like the Army War series that's a 10-part show that they're filming. I think they're filming from March, so that'll be coming out like end of 2021, basically. But his first like flagship project, which is what Apple had him on stage at the March event for, was Amazing Stories. And it just never really delivered. Like it's kind of meant to be a family like sci-fi show, but even, you know, dumbing down like the plots and, you know, you're not going to get hard violence or big drama and stuff. Even accounting for all that, I don't find the episodes very compelling. Like I haven't even watched all of them. I watched like 2, 3, and I was like, I'm not going to bother with the rest.
Yeah,
of
this. And
like,
that,
it's just,
and
it doesn't quite reach the level of the other, of the, like it sticks out for being so mediocre in what is generally I'd say everything else on TV Plus is like good to very good. And then you've got like Amazing Stories just sitting out there in the corner, like, well, they made it, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, that's how I feel like if every episode is different and the first few don't catch you, then it's like maybe there's one of eight that are pretty, that is all right. But like, you got to invest a lot of time to find that out. And it might not be the case. So I'm the same way. I haven't finished the first episode. It just never grabbed me. I even feel like sometimes I kind of want to like just like not like hate watch it, but just like knowing this isn't going to be great, get through it. I haven't yet. So that says something about it. And then, you know, I think about Apple TV in terms of, would I recommend it to people? What do I think about the service overall compared to other streaming services? Just how is Apple doing with it? And it definitely comes up enough where there's TV shows that you can talk about outside of the Apple connection, but it's just the TV show is worth watching or talking about with someone that I think, you know, and there's not many, but there's a few where it's like, have you seen this? Are you watching this? And then, you know, it isn't, do you have Apple TV Plus? And then talk about the shows. It's the show first. And that's a pretty good grade to, you know, give it, I think, is do you talk about a TV show versus the service and more than that, the Apple connection, because it's easy that at the Apple angle could overshadow the content itself. And that would just mean that the service isn't very great. It's just an Apple service.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's the case. And the longer the service is out there, the more that becomes true. And we've even seen a little bit of stuff where they're bringing in not just original content, but, catalogs of stuff. And I think the more they do that, the better it will be as well. Just look at Long Way Up. They've got the other two series in that franchise. And then, controversially, the Charlie Brown stuff, you know?
Yeah.
And as we get to season 2, this is pretty good.
Yeah. Like it still is early. Like,
yeah.
Apple is in this for the long game. I hope I said this a year ago. If you're expecting TV Plus to be like a top contender for like the best streaming service in after a year, you're just wrong. Like before it came out, before everyone knew what they were going to do, there were all these like, it's going to kill Netflix. Is it going to compete with Netflix? Like, it's not going to happen. Like, TV Plus is a small content offering, but given the small content offering, I'd say the amount of like interest, hype, readership, listenership, you know, subscriber count estimates, it seems about in line, right? And as they add more stuff and they are making wholly new stuff, like it'd be very easy for them to say, we've suddenly got 10,000 hours content because we bought Comcast or we bought X, right? And that's, you know, nothing against those services that do that. But if you're going to come at it, you know, making wholly new stuff, you also have to come with different expectations about like how much stuff is going to be on there, how fast can they ramp up subscriber growth, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. And given what the TV Plus offering is, I feel like they're on track. Like, are they a breakout success? No. Are they a failure? No. They're like, you know, I think they've met expectations in terms of, you know, like consumer popularity, in terms of like critical response and like awards and stuff. They're doing pretty well there too, to be honest. Like, they got their Golden Globe win and their Emmy win for the morning show. They've received a few different accolades here and there. And there's a real chance that the Oscar for Best Animated Film, which will be like February 2021, is going to be a race between Apple's Wolfwalkers, which is a new film they came out with a couple of weeks ago, and the Disney film Soul. Mm-hmm. Like, just this weekend, Wolfwalkers won Best Animated Feature at like the LA Film Critics and the New York Film Critics, and the like three different film critic groups just gave the win to Wolfwalkers over Soul. And it is very, very rare for a film that isn't a Disney film to beat the Disney film in a year when there's a big new Disney film out, right? And the fact that Apple has even a contender in that space in year one is, you know, they're going to be very happy with that. And if they win, they'll be over the moon. So that'd be interesting to see if they actually snatch that.
Yeah, very cool.
I'd just summarize by saying TV Plus is on track. Obviously, they need more shows. Like, you know, that in the last 2 months, they added another 25% to the overall content library. Like, that's how still early days they are, right? Like, you can't say this whole service is a complete disaster and never going to succeed based on how they are today. Apple has plenty of money to keep this thing going, keep building it out for years. And they have multi-year content deals with huge names, including like Richard Plepler and stuff like that. And I think they're going to ride this out for 5 years, and then they'll see at the end of 5 years how it's doing. And then maybe there's a judgment call on, you know, are we going to, you know, shut this down or keep it going? And at least how it is today, I don't expect that it's going to be that much of a failure. They're going to abandon it. Like, it seems to be on pace. So we'll see how it goes. And there's definitely a lot of stuff coming in 2021 that I'm looking forward to. So it'll be another interesting year for the platform.
Yeah, let's think on TV Plus. I'll say kind of the year looking back at it is two things. One is we're judging it after COVID-19 affected what shows could you know go through production in season two, and we don't have any season twos yet, right? Like, we're still on season one of everything. And that just wouldn't have been the case if not for COVID-19 this year. And so we've seen trailers for next seasons, but not even all of the next seasons. And just kind of that promise of what season two will hold. But I think otherwise, we would have thought that by the time that the renewal date for paying for it for the first time came about, that we'd have season two, right?
I think they were aiming to get the first lot of season twos out by like November, and then the year trials would expire in November. And to counter that, they extended the free trials to January, right? At the end of January. And what do you know? The first season twos are launching in the middle of January. You go.
And the other thing is, it's kind of weird, but I never really got the chance to pay for TV Plus outright. I liked it enough that I changed my plan from monthly to annual once the free trial would end from having bought an iPhone last year. Then the trial was extended, and then Apple One Premiere came out, and like, we didn't have a bundle a year ago. Now we have a bundle that includes Apple TV Plus, and I will pay for Apple One Premiere for the other services
for the rest of your life.
Yeah. For the iCloud stuff, for the Apple Music stuff, For Apple TV is probably like my third tier in that of like why I'm paying for it, but it's in there, above Arcade, and then Fitness is kind of to be determined because it's so new. But yeah. And then I forgot about news in there too. I don't think I'll ever have a chance to just outright pay for Apple TV Plus when I would have otherwise, but now the bundle's there. So,
well, yeah. And you made a good point like a few months ago where you can't, like, this is the whole market of like, Disney Plus has X many subscribers, Netflix has X many subscribers. All that stuff's kind of smoke and mirrors at some level because so much stuff is just bundled in with other stuff. And like, you know, if Apple was actually announcing numbers, they could announce everyone that was on free trials for a hardware year. And now, like, do you count everyone who's an Apple One subscriber as a TV Plus user? Well, you surely can't, right?
But I would not have Amazon Prime Video if not for Amazon Prime shipping.
Yeah, exactly. Like, all of the numbers stuff is kind of smoke and mirrors. Like, obviously Netflix is the biggest by mile, but then it's, you know, probably Amazon Prime Video and stuff. But once you get below that, it's much of a rat race, and it's going to take a while before we see any sort of like consolidation and stuff, because this is the future, whether you like it or not. Like, four or five streaming services are eventually going to just establish themselves as that's how you get your content, and that's going to be that. We are sponsored this week by Pillow. Getting a good night's sleep is underrated, but with a little help, it can be life-changing. Pillow is an all-in-one sleep tracking solution to help you be more aware of your sleep patterns and discover what might be affecting your sleep quality. If you have an Apple Watch, tracking your sleep is as easy as wearing it to bed. Pillow will track and analyze your sleep automatically. And thanks to widgets in iOS 14, you can get a sleep report directly on your home screen using Pillow's beautiful sleep report widget, available in small and medium sizes. Just tap on the widget to go straight to your sleep session analysis. Also new with iOS 14, Pillow integrates beautifully with the system's sleep modes. For instance, you can launch Pillow or start a sleep session when your scheduled bedtime or wind down mode kicks in. And of course, one of Pillow's most loved features is the ability to get a detailed heart rate diagram of every sleep session. Compare your sleep quality with your weight, steps, caffeine consumption, and many other health metrics to discover how they might be affecting how you sleep. And you can enable recording, and Pillow will save the sounds that you make during sleep, from sleep talking to sleep apnea, just even unexpected noises that might be affecting your sleep during the night. You can record it and listen to it back, and a lot of users have been surprised by the results. Pillow is privacy-minded. All of your sleep and audio data is encrypted and stored on your device, and your iCloud storage is using end-to-end encryption. Pillow is available on the App Store for iPhone, Apple Watch, and iPad. Discover all of Pillow's features at naybox.com/pillow, naybox.com/pillow. Sleep well and stay safe. Our thanks to Pillow for their support of Happy Hour.
All right, the time is finally kind of talk about AirPods Max. We discussed AirPods Max 2 weeks ago when they were unveiled as the mystery December product that's good for winter, according to our friend.
Yeah, I don't know about the good for winter, but
love to dream. And well, earmuffs, very expensive electronic earmuffs.
Not waterproof, not meant to be used outdoors. Yeah. Earmuffs.
I told you at the time when we discussed them, you know, that I thought that the price, as we all believe, you know, was just not what we were anticipating. I think at the high end, we were thinking like $400 to replace the higher end Beats headphone, like Beats Studio headphones, for example. They didn't do that. They went even higher than that, to the point where at $550, you could have Beats Studio be updated and still have a place in the lineup that makes sense. I didn't buy them though on the launch or the pre-order day, the first day that you could buy them, which was that it wasn't the day that they were announced, right? It was a few days later. Is that right?
Yeah, I think it was the Friday.
Yeah, that sounds right. So I didn't buy them on the day that it was released. And then I wanted to think about it some more. And then I thought about it and was like, well, I'm going to buy these and try them out. And, it was most of that we talked about on the show. Like, I wanted to know, why am I going to buy these? What do I want to have as the bar for being, happy with them as a purchase? You know, what need do they satisfy? And it's that AirPods otherwise wouldn't, or any other headphones, cause they're so similar to like Beats Solo Pro in that they've got noise canceling and transparency, but those are very small headphones and they're Beats. They've got the Beats kind of build quality. And they're not over ear, they're on ear. So there's big difference there. But, in terms of, what I wanted them for, it's to listen to music and be wowed and that I can hear things, details that I can't hear otherwise without other big headphones. And they do that. And then also to have headphones that I can use to watch movies and TV shows with and have kind of a headphone experience that wows me like a good home theater might wow me. And in both of those measurements, they certainly do that. And I'll talk more about that in a bit, but, because I didn't order on the release day or the pre-order day, when I made that decision to just spend the money and do it, all of the colors were 12 to 14 weeks out. So, you know, literally next March, 3 months from now, 3.5 months from now. That was still true on release day, which I think was a Tuesday, but they did have in-store options to buy them in stores. And in Florida right now, the whole state is this sort of, with the Apple Store, you can pick up things, but you can't go inside and shop. And they had the option for 2-hour delivery. So my choices when I ordered online from the Apple Store were 12 to 14 weeks shipping or 2-hour delivery for $5. It's like, it was wonderful. And that was like right at 8 a.m. I got the color I wanted, space gray, you know, and I got the cable so I can listen to the pod. I can hear myself through my microphone as we podcast. And, then the shipping window is like 11 to 1. Which was 2 hours after they opened or an hour after they opened. And they came right to my apartment building and just went downstairs to the entrance and saw someone with an Apple bag and said, "Hey, I'm Zach." And they said, "Oh, hey, here you are." And that was it. And that was a very cold day because I thought that I would miss out or that I have to go out to the mall and deal with that. And that's not fun right now. So it was a glorious experience. And, I had a couple of my Space Explored colleagues here with me, Seth and Daryl, and they were both kind of, you know, mocking the headphones as being overpriced and kind of not the design that anyone expected. And I let them try them like soon after I tried them. And I put on For All Mankind, that post credit scene where the rocket launches from the ocean and turned on Spatial Audio. And after that scene, it goes to music, you know, for the credits. It's like they get the whole experience. And then I said, and pick your favorite song and play your favorite song. And they were both very happy with the headphones. Like they didn't want to give them back. And my colleague Seth, he actually was like, I am buying those, 100% buying those, at some point in the next year. So he was sold on them. You know, that's cool. Something else that I was kind of surprised about or didn't know to expect, you know, I didn't love the design, like kind of like my colleague. I didn't love the design online, but in person, I was plenty happy with it.
Can you express? Cause I obviously, when we spoke about it, when they were announced, I was very happy. I liked how they looked, right?
Yeah.
What part of them did you think would look bad? Do you see what I mean?
Sure. Yeah. So, you know how the rails are silver?
Mm-hmm.
And they kind of the way they're going, that just looks so much like a B&O headphone to me. And I don't like the way that B&O headphones look, like the higher end, like they just remind me of like an older gentleman or somebody that really is like finicky about music or sound. And I don't like to look like because I'm not an audiophile and I don't dislike audiophiles, but I just don't want to come off that way. And, they just reminded me that they were of that look. In practice, you know, just in holding them and everything, I'm much happier with the material, because like the top of them feels like a smart cover kind of material. And then there's the mesh, and then there's the metal, or, you know, the aluminum of the kind of the cans and
the cockpit. Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't love like aluminum stuff, you know, like if I'm thinking of premium products, you know, think of the Apple Watch and even iPhones, you know, aluminum is the material by default. And then stainless steel is the better material for the pricier things, or not, maybe not better, but, you know, fancier. And so it's all of those things made me think like, I don't really love that. But, you know, in holding them, they feel very durable and tough, and hopefully they are. But, the name has to wear on you over time because it's kind of associated with like how much do I like these to how much do I like the name. And I've been impressed with them and not disappointed. And so the name's kind of worn on me too, but. You know, to go from that, the cups, they're slim, they're large, they're you know, they cover your full ear and everything, and how they feel is going to be different for everybody, you know, based on the head size and everything. But I guess my head size is like, it's like not to be funny, but large. Like if I'm buying my motorcycle helmet, it's always size large, not medium, not XL, but large. And with headphones, I often have the experience where I have to extend them the full amount, and then they feel like they're tight over time, and it gets uncomfortable to wear. And just with these, I don't know if it's size or material, but I've been wearing these, especially over the last few days, for like hours and hours at a time, to the point where I got to charge them in between uses because I'm wearing them so much, just kind of to enjoy around the apartment. And that's really neat. I'm happy that I'm comfortable with these, because I can't say the same about other headphones that I've tried, you know, even large over ear headphones, not just the on ear kinds that tend to be smaller. So I'm happy with that. But the size of the cups are large and that they cover a lot of area, but they're not thick. They don't bulb out. They're flat. And I was surprised by that, because usually when I wear large over-ear headphones, I feel like I'm wearing this big thing that like adds a lot to my head. And these are big, but because the cups are so flat, like they're almost perfectly flat on the sides. There's a little bit of roundness to them, but they're much slimmer than any headphone I've tried before.
Yeah, you sent me a photo of you wearing them, and I was like, wow, those sides are low profile. Like,
yeah. To be so big, they are very low profile, like from the front, you know, and from the side, obviously they're big headphones, you know, they have the big cup, but from the sides, they're very flat. And I like that, because I haven't had that experience with the headphones I bought, you know, and it's a neat look.
Does the weight bother you?
No, and I don't have the experience of comparing them to a bunch of other headphones. I know in Apple Watches, I often, and even the iPhone, like the premium materials are heavier, and it's less practical to have a heavier Apple Watch as you work out, or a heavier iPhone, especially if you're, it's like you get the big one and it's your camera. But, I don't dislike the heavier products, it's kind of a cost for the material, the way it makes me feel and the way it looks to me. And with the headphones, I haven't felt like, oh, these are too heavy, because it just comes down to comfort. If they're uncomfortable, then I would say it's probably because of the weight. And so I don't like the weight, but I can wear these for hours at a time and not feel like I've got a headache or any kind of tension on top of my head or anything like that. And so I'm perfectly happy with it. Yeah.
I haven't got any of these yet, but just looking at like photos that you've shared and other people obviously getting them, taking the pictures around, I like how the space gray ones look. I'm not sure about the other colors. Like the kind of like cheapness you get the aluminium, I think really shows up when you look at some of the other colors they have, like the green ones and stuff. Like it just doesn't look as professional or as like upmarket as the slate black like default ones. I don't know what you think of the colors. Like would you buy other colors? Or I mean, obviously you bought the color you wanted, but would the other colors, to me, they don't have the same impact.
Yeah, I agree with that. I was very early. I would have bought silver or blue or silver in that order if I had to, but I bought space gray. I wanted, that's what I wanted. And seeing the colors, like if there was a red, I'd probably buy a red. But none of the colors that exist that are not the space gray one appealed to me. And I'm glad I had the option to buy the ones I wanted. If I had to have bought white or blue, I'd probably say they're great, you know, because I had to spend $550 on them. But no, I agree with that the space gray ones look the best, and that's what I got. So I'm happy with that.
I love that they have no logos on them. Like, I don't mind how a lot of the Beats headphones look, but or sound for that matter. Like, obviously they don't sound as good as these, but they're fine. It's just the fact they got massive B's on the side of them, and you know that B relates to Beats, and it's like, oh, I don't like everything I wear. I don't like wearing like logos around and stuff. I dress quite plain or whatever. And like with the Apple Watch, it has a Apple logo on it, but it's on the underneath. So when you're wearing the watch, you can't see the logo. I know people know that it's an Apple Watch because it's just so distinctive as a product. But if it was like, oh, here's the Apple Watch and it's a massive logo on the dial, then I would not wear it as much by a long shot. Like a lot of other fancy watches that you see, they write like Omega on them across the middle of them and stuff like that. And I've never been attracted to that. I would happily buy all of my Apple products without the Apple logo engraved into them if I could get them. Like the HomePods, I think look great, no Apple logo visible. The phone, like you cover it with a case or whatever. The watches, you can't see it. These, no logo at all. Like not even like there's no logo on the cans. There's no logo, you know, small in, you know, fine print anywhere. It's literally just completely plain, which I think is fantastic. Like, that is what I want.
If you take off the cup, the magnetic cup, which I didn't do until maybe after a week of having them because I just didn't want to break them, but it's so easy to take off and put back on with the magnetic cup. The pads, there's a logo under where the pad goes on the inside.
Okay. That's fine. It is hidden.
Yeah, very hidden.
Like most headphones, they put logos on the cans and it's like, I don't want to be wearing logos.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
So I don't know if I want to be wearing $550 headphones either, because that's also making a weird statement about the world. But you know what I mean? Like at least on the logo front, I can be happy.
I'm just dealing with it. It's a weird thing. Like people, you know, a lot of my photographer friends here on the Space Coast, because I'm going out to see like rocket launches and returns, and the last thing they know, I bought them because all my Space Explorer colleagues made fun of me for buying them, even though they want them now too. So people were asking me like, well, how are they? And I'm like, well, I'm not disappointed. And that's the big thing. Like if they were $550 and socks, that I'd be like, they're not for me, but I actually really like them. A few things about sound that I can offer from my own experience is that, you know, A, I wasn't disappointed in that I bought other headphones. Like I bought the Bose QC35s years ago and thought, okay, now I'm spending a few hundred dollars on headphones. They're going to be really good. I can't wait to hear my favorite songs and like hear all the clarity of it that I didn't get before. And then was disappointed that wasn't the case, that it was actually more muffled than like earbuds. With these, I played a few things. There's a playlist on Apple Music called Binaural Frequencies, and this is like a lot of weird sounds, and I like to listen to that as I'm like writing and working, and it has a lot of the stereo effects in it, and that one was a cool demonstration. One of my favorite bands is called Circus Survive, and they do a lot of weird stuff with the guitar where they play like on one channel or the other channel, and there's a lot of stereo effects, and all that music sounds really good to me in the headphones. And then my favorite song would probably be The Adventure from Angels and Airwaves. And that definitely has a stereo effect on the guitar, and that doesn't disappoint. So those were the tests for me. It was like, can I listen to my favorite music and hear details that I want to hear that I couldn't get otherwise? And I can. And then another sound detail is a lot of times with headphones that I've used before, you know, you go past 80% and you can get that loud if there's things around you that are loud that you want to like compensate for, but you might not have a good sound experience that way. But even with 100% volume, I found that with these headphones, nothing crackles or breaks or gets distorted. So I was happy with that.
Nice. Like, as long as they, like, and the reviews kind of like collectively generally agree that these do sound better than, you know, the $300, $400 competition. There's disagreement as whether they are actually worth the extra $150, but as long as they're sounding better, I can deal with that, right? Like, I know some of this is subjective. People hear different things. People prefer different flavors or mixes of bass and treble and all that, you know, all that jazz. But like, I think it's pretty conclusive that the AirPods Max do, on the whole, sound better in the competition. Noise cancelling is at least on par with, or maybe slightly better for some people. Like, if they didn't sound as good, or if they didn't have areas where they clearly sounded better, it'd be a lot harder to like ignore the price point. But for me, they're good enough that, you know, at the moment I'm stuffed, right? Like, I'm not going to wait till March to buy them, but I kind of want them. Like,
yeah,
I'm just going to have to like shut my eyes and try and forget how much they cost and just buy them and
yeah,
be
just
happy. You know what I mean?
If you think about it in terms of as an Apple product that you're going to use for years and years, then it's like an Apple Watch that you might replace in a year, or it's like a computer that you're going to use for years, but maybe not as long, maybe as long as these headphones. So, it's not insanely priced. They're just expensive for headphones. Spatial audio, it's cool. I hope it comes to more places in the future. You know, the Apple TV, the Mac, more content on iPhone and iPad, but when it's available, it definitely is very cool, especially with over ear headphones. The button I found to be, you know, for changing modes, I'm happy with it. I've got the controls down pat to where I usually have them in noise cancellation mode. And, you know, you click it to change it to transparency, or you can map in to have none. And in like none mode, then there's that kind of vacuum sound that you hear. And I don't recommend it for anybody because it's one or the other for these headphones for me. And that's, I'm glad that you can choose to never use none in that mode. And by default, it's not even there. It's only on the phone. Transparency on over your headphones is interesting. You know, the first time I experienced transparency was in Beats Solo Pro headphones, which are on ear, but it was still amazing. It's like, these are big cans on my ears, muffles the sound around me with transparency on though. I can hear everything as if there's no headphones on. Even more the case with AirPods Pro. They seem necessary for AirPods Pro to have like in your ear, but you can hear around you. I don't think AirPods Pro would be as big of a hit if there wasn't transparency. The same thing for these. To have things over your ears and to block out sound is cool, but to have them over your ears while also hearing sound around you, but also the great quality of audio coming through the speakers is really useful. So I've got kind of a routine to where if I'm working, you know, my kids in the background chattering, I'll have noise cancellation on with something playing. And, you know, if it comes up and taps me or someone wants my attention, I've got the motions down of change mode and, you know, with the button, and then click the digital crown to pause the audio or turn it down. And it's such a cool routine. Like, it just feels so natural now. You know, it's like a two finger thing with click one, click the other. And then I don't take them off and I pause and I can hear what's around me. And it's, you know, it's a neat experience. The crown for changing the audio volume, it's very good. It's bigger than the Apple Watch crown, as we've seen. I think it looks and feels good. And as you get used to the button location, it's not intuitive where it's located, but once you get used to it, you build the habit. The default rotation for changing volume is counterclockwise to increase the volume and clockwise to decrease the volume. That's default. And I complained to you about that. And you said, maybe there's a setting to adjust it that you thought you'd seen. And there is, and I changed it, and I'm so happy now, because now I go clockwise to increase volume and counterclockwise to decrease volume. And it's not the default, but it is an option. And to me, it fixed these. Like, the one complaint I had is solved by that setting.
Yeah, it's good they have a setting for that, because it'd be so frustrating if you had like these really expensive headphones that are really nice, but just the orientation in which the way the dial works was wrong to your brain. It would like frustrate you so much. It's hard for me to imagine whether counterclockwise makes sense or not. I guess when I eventually get them, I'll tell you. But it's
if you turn the crown on your watch to increase the volume, it's clockwise because it's up. And even though this is on a different plane, instead of being on the side, it's on top. Yeah, that's the thing.
Like, it's horizontal versus vertical, isn't it?
Yes. But it's the same button, and this is just a different orientation. So clockwise makes sense to me. Not clockwise, counterclockwise. And it's as frustrating as if someone reverses your scrolling direction on the trackpad. You know, it's like, that's how it is. So I'm glad
you can change like it. The trackpads, there's a reason that Apple lets you change the setting, because enough people inside Apple also had the exact same complaint of, we don't know which way it should be, so we'll just let you have the choice.
Yep. When you change the volume, there's on the watch, you know, with series, what was it, 4 and later, you had haptic feedback for the crown. That you don't really have that with the AirPods Max, but you do get a click sound, which just sounds like the fake click wheel sound from an iPod to me. And it's very satisfying when you can hear it. Oftentimes you can't, though, because either the volume's too low or it's playing behind audio, and so it's not distinctive enough to hear. And so it feels like someone keeps turning off haptic feedback and turning it back on to me. And, you know, if you're used to it being there, it's very pleasant. If you're not used to it being there, then you just don't miss it. But it feels like I keep having haptic feedback turn on and off, even because it's volume-based and what's playing over the click sound. If it was actually like a click, I don't know how you'd handle it, but they've done such a good job on the watch and so satisfying that surely on your ear, you could do something similar to that. So that's something I would improve on as well.
The case.
Well, the case lives in my backpack, and Apple's done a good job on updating, you know, giving numbers for what the case does compared to not using the case at all in terms of battery and power states.
Yeah. You don't need to worry about it for battery reasons. Like, that was just kind of a distraction.
Yeah, basically case, you know, I'm using it to keep the aluminum from getting scratched in my backpack. And I'm not concerned about the mesh being, you know, pulled apart or the softer material being scraped, because there's nothing in my backpack to do that. If you're just throwing it in a bag of other stuff, though, I could certainly see that. And there's going to be a market for other cases, obviously.
Yeah, if I was getting these... And I may still do get these.
Yeah, when you get these, yeah.
Yeah, when I get them eventually. I would not be able to stand having the case that's in... I can kind of see where Apple's coming from. Like, there's the whole... We don't want to, like, cover this whole product in this massive wraparound thing and make it, like, twice as bulky or whatever. And we just want to have, like, this tiny little thing that can fold over it. But the headband part can't be replaced. Like, the ear cups, you can buy new ones, right? But the headband is fixed in, and whether it's going to get broken, frayed, or even just dusty, like the dust alone of putting it in your bag and pulling it out again, that's like a non-starter of me. I need a case that actually covers the whole thing. Like, and to me, from what I'm imagining that I'd use these for, I'm not even sure if I'd actually take them traveling that much. Like, if I'm going for walks and stuff, I'll just take my, you know, earbud to style AirPods, right? Not the over-ear ones. So the over-ear ones are going to stay at home, so they'll probably end up being on like a headphone stand, if you see what I mean, when I'm not using them.
Yeah, then, and with that, like, no wireless charging is the biggest bummer, because you have to plug in the lightning cable to charge them. And I've, you know, now I'm it's not new, but I'm charging things with USB-C. I'm charging things with MagSafe, which I love. I'm charging things with Apple Watch Puck, which is cool. And then I'm charging things with lightning. And I just can't get lightning out of the rotation, no matter how hard I try.
Yeah, like, if they could have found some way to have some kind of wireless charging element on these, or maybe like a MagSafe section, then you could have had like either Apple make it or a third party make like a headphone stand that also charges the thing. But because it plugs in via cable, it's always going to be like slightly more hassle. Like, for the premium level that it is, I just wish there was a slightly more elegant way to charge.
Yeah, we need AirPods Max Pro. Is what we need.
Oh, no, we don't.
Because it's already priced to have all those good features that we want in it. We just don't have them yet, so.
Yeah, like, the defining feature of, like, AirPods and AirPods Pro is the case, right? Like, it's a huge part of the thing. Yeah, it gives you extra battery life, and it makes them really easy to charge. And then the AirPods Max come along, and they don't really have that. Like, they have the inbuilt battery, and then you have to plug them in the lightning ports.
Lightning instead of USB-C is a bigger complaint to me than no wireless charging. No wireless charging is a complaint. Then the case is, like, below all of that. The case, I don't use it very often. It's just when I put it in my backpack because I have it, and it lives in my backpack. And I do take these out. So I've taken these to, like, parks and when I'm a passenger in a car and use them. Really love them that way. I would just put them in the backpack anyway without a case if I had to. If it came with a traditional case, like in headphones I've had before, I have a hard case that's, you know, obviously bigger than the headphones themselves because it has to encase them. And then it's hard shell. And so there's no kind of flexibility with it. Those are good in the most protective case. And I hope we see very soon those come to market for AirPods Max. But I've only used that case a few times with headphones before, and I've usually attached it to my bag, not put it inside the bag. So it's like hanging on with like a carabiner clip. And so if these came with a big case, I'd probably just put it in the closet and not use it much. So I guess what I'm trying to say is, like, if there's only one fan of the super minimal case that comes with it, it's me. And if I sold it separately, I probably would have bought it separately too. I think in photos, it looks stupid. In practice, I don't see it in the bottom of my dark backpack. I just feel it, and I put them in and take them out by hand, you know, not even by eye. So I'm perfectly happy with that case for what it is. I've never charged them in the case because I don't charge them in my backpack. So I don't have to deal with, is the connector exposed just the right amount? That's kind of it. You know, the case is, it does what I need to do. You know, I think the majority of folks would say otherwise. And it's to the point where, you know, in a time when so many accessories don't come with products that probably in the future it won't come with it because it's just not appreciated enough.
Yeah, someone made the analogy to the original iPad case, like the first generation iPad. The case that Apple had day one was this like weird folding contraption that you had to like fold it four different ways to get it to stand up, and it was really like bulky and weird. And then everyone complained about that case for it being kind of rubbish. And second year around, they came out with the smart cover, which was like perfect and designed from the ground up, right?
See, I think this is more like smart cover. Even the material feels the same way, which is my one complaint about it. You know, I think we thought it might be like leather, like fake leather or something, or like cloth, but it's that rubbery material where if you get the least amount of like liquid on it or oil or whatever, you know, from your skin, it gets very dirty and it's hard to stay clean. And mine's that space gray color, like the, you know, the smart keyboard or magic keyboard. And that's partly why it lives in my backpack now, because I was kind of using it on my desk for the first few days and I was just grossed out by how gross it was looking. And now it just lives in the bag and I don't see it. I just use it to put them down in there. It is what it is.
But overall, thumbs up.
Yeah. And even the portability of these, I know a lot of feedback is that they should fold inward and like collapse to their smallest state possible. And I've had headphones that do that. You know, all Beats headphones do that. And there's just something about it that not just Beats alone, but like even if it's a nicer material, it doesn't feel chintzy, but it feels like, more, like a breaking point eventually, that if something was to go wrong, that hinge or whatever they have to use to make it fold could. And I like that these feel sturdier than that and that they just fold inward, and it's smooth to me, you know, and I'm happy with these. That's all I can say. I've done a lot of watching, listening to music, listening to podcasts, even listening to or watching TV. I've been watching a lot of TV lately, and I think I'd prefer with headphones on than through the HomePod or through, you know, any other speaker, because I just hear much better and don't disturb anybody. So I've certainly worn these for longer than like 2 hour periods. I've probably reached like 8 hours over the span of a day, if not more than that. And not just because they're new, because I think I'm getting out of the honeymoon phase, you know, where I'm only using them when it's appropriate, not just when I want to use them. But I'm really, really enjoying them.
Yeah, that's good. Like, I'm still a bit conflicted, right? Because they are insanely expensive. And something you actually kind of put me off more last week, because you said like, so when you actually think about using them.
Oh yeah. Cause I want you to not just get them because they're the Apple headphones, obviously.
I know, but like, and I'm normally pretty good at that, right?
Yeah. Exactly.
But these are just cool, and I do like nice headphones, but when am I going to wear it? I don't know. Like, luckily, they're so expensive at the moment that I'd feel no, like, rush to go out and pick them up, and also the fact that they're now, like, 12 weeks delayed and whatever helps as well.
What if they show up in February, though? Like, what if they show up in January? You know, they magically have inventory again.
And- yeah, I mean, then you have to, like, juggle. Are they going to do a second generation of these anytime soon?
No.
Probably not, right?
Like, yeah, AirPods of any kind last a long time before they make
these
changes.
These feel more like HomePod-y, where they're going to be, like, the same for a while.
Or Apple TV 4K.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll see. We'll see. When they come back into stock again, I'll think about it. Like, I do want them. I'm not going to lie. Like, I think they're really cool, and I'm sure they sound great.
Yeah. I mean, as Happy Hour listeners know, during COVID times, if you have a toddler at home who is very chatty with their toys, these are great to have. You know, AirPods Pro are great to have. But I feel like there's just a certain niceness to them. There is, you know, if you like the way that a MacBook Air feels, a MacBook Pro feels, like the material of that aluminum and everything, like, this is the same build quality as those, you know, and that the AirPods are plasticky and, you know, more like, you know, portable accessories, I guess. I don't know. These are nice.
Yeah. It's certainly not an embarrassment of a product, right?
Yeah, like, that's for sure. That's for sure.
Apple did a good job on them.
Yep. Yep. And as I, you know, we're testing now with the wire, the lightning to 3.5 millimeter, you can, with our Rode podcast mics, we can actually use them for podcasting. So, before this, I was using not AirPods, but the EarPod with the wire, you know,
the OG.
Yeah. For hearing my own audio. So yeah, that's AirPods. And, we planned to discuss this last week, and it kind of moved to this week because of how much we had to talk about last week. And so I was kind of glad that we got the extra time for me to think about this stuff, because I do feel like I'm out of that honeymoon phase and into the actual usage phase. And these are going everywhere with me. When I take my backpack, you know, they're in there. So I'm happy.
I mean, that's probably the best recommendation you can give them.
Yeah. Yep. All right. That is the Happy Hour podcast for this week. If you have any feedback for the show, you can email us at happyhour@9to5mac.com. You can follow me on Twitter at ApolloZach. That's ApolloZac. Benjamin, you're on Twitter at?
BZMAA.
And also say I've really got into emotion with my Space Time podcast for Space Explored. So if you want to hear more podcasting with me and not my 3-year-old in the background. With FaceTime, I've managed to have some of those episodes, but we're doing it every week now on Friday at noon. We record on youtube.com/spaceexplored. So, and it's also an Apple Podcast and Overcast and Spotify. So thanks for giving that a check out. Everyone have Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays. We will see you all next year. Bye.
Bye-bye.